This is Anya Leonard, the co-founder of Classical Wisdom, a website dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds. And today I'm talking to Stephen Dando Collins, a military history author who has written 43 books, including 12 specifically on Roman history, as well as the rise of an empire, on which the major motion picture 300, Rise of an Empire, is based, and his recent book, Caligula, the Mad Emperor of Rome. Now, many of our listeners will be familiar with the name Caligula. His full name was Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus Germanicus. He was born in 31st of August, 12, and then became emperor at the tender age of 24. 4 years later, he was assassinated. So today we're going to talk a bit more about who was Caligula and how he became emperor.
So Caligula's father was heir apparent. When he died, his son Nero Germanicus was the next in line until he is bumped off through the agency of Sejanus. So then his brother, Caligula's next eldest brother, Drusus Germanicus, is arrested, locked up, and forced to take his own life. So then we find that we've got two heirs to the throne, Caligula and his cousin Gemellus, who is the son of Germanicus's stepbrother. Caligula is the elder. Tiberius, as he's aging, he's well into his 70s, and he realises he's got to nominate a successor. So he says, I'll let Jupiter decide. He'll let the king of the gods decide. So he makes them live with him on Capri. He just spent the last 12 years of his life based on Capri. And he sent a message via his chamberlain to both Caligula and Gemellus. Gemellus was, I think, 14 at the time, saying, come to my chamber. And he said the first one who walks through the door as a result of this summons will be the next emperor. Well, young Gemellus says, I'll have breakfast first. So it's Caligula that walks through the door. And Tiberius has never been a big fan. He's not a fan of any of Germanicus or any of his children, and never been a big fan of Caligula. So he bursts into tears and says, you will be the new emperor. And when Gemellus finally turns up, he embraces him and says, your cousin will be the new emperor, but I've made him promise that he'll care for you and treat you well. And in fact, once Caligula becomes emperor, he adopts Gemellus, makes him his son and heir, and everything looks like it's going to be rosy. So only a matter of months later, Tiberius dies, and Caligula finds himself emperor, having had absolutely no training in the arts of government.
Oh, it's amazing! You can see how maybe perhaps he went mad.
Yes, how many young people of 24, having had no training, given charge, let's say, of the biggest business in the world, how are they going to fare? It was asking a lot.
Yes.
To think that he could run the biggest empire in the world, the biggest military in the world, without any training in government or in the military. And many people are unaware that many things we take for granted and assume are very modern, go back to the Romans and well before that. I talk about in Caligula, the importance of the handshake to the Romans and how that follows through to the present day.
The importance of the handshake. I mean, can you explain that a bit more? I don't know this.
Yeah. In the final chapter of Caligula, I draw a comparison. Well, I don't draw the comparison. I assess the comparison that's been made by many commentators between Caligula and President Donald Trump. And one of the areas that I noticed with interest was the handshake of President Trump. Because as I tell in the story of Caligula, the handshake was very important to the Romans. It had started out thousands of years before the handshake as a form of greeting between two people. and they reach out the right hand to prove that they don't have a weapon in their hand. But by the time of the Romans, it was if you wanted to show deference to the other party or respect, you would yield the upper hand, and this is where that saying comes from, giving somebody the upper hand. You would extend your hand with the palm up so they could shake your hand with their palm down in the superior so-called position. And I was interested in looking at President Trump's handshakes. People like President Putin or President Macron of France, Mr. Trump often, when they have met over the last 2.5 years, would extend his hand palm up, yielding the upper hand to these people. Yet, when shaking hands with people like Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, or Angela Merkel of Germany, he would give them a straight up and down handshake. Now, I don't know whether that's conscious, and whether he's showing deference to these people, or I don't know. But anyway, it's an interesting comparison.
Now, you have said that you want to make comparisons between Caligula and Trump. I mean, do you think there is a lot of comparison? I mean, are they similar? Are they completely dissimilar? What role do they have in history?
Readers would need to read the whole chapter, but in many ways they're very different. Caligula became the third emperor of Rome at the age of 24. Donald Trump became president of the United States at the age of 70. So in those respects, they're very different. But then they had a very similar background. They both had very successful fathers who died before they came to power. Both had multiple wives and so on. Both were sports fanatics. Caligula was totally obsessed with chariot racing and actually raced chariots himself and built his own private chariot racing hippodrome. President Trump's obsession is golf and golf courses. When we get to things such as policy, very, very different. No real, genuine comparison can be made. The main comparison was because I found so many others commentators making this comparison.
I mean, would some of those features be features just common to people that are in high levels of positions of power or high achievers? Like, could you say most of those same attributes for, like, the football player Ronaldo?
I don't really see a comparison. One interviewer wanted me to, compare Caligula and Nixon, Caligula and Cheney and so on. And really, apart from the fact that they were very powerful people, they were and who in some cases succumbed to corruption. The comparisons don't really stand up. So some comparisons do stand up in Trump's and others don't.
So Caligula, just as a general character from history, has probably one of the worst reputations of all. And you have mentioned in your book that you sort of discuss his position in history, whether he sort of deserved this treatment or not. I mean, was he as mad as they say?
By the end of his four-year reign, it's amazing that somebody who was in power for such a short period has had such an impact on history. But we can blame Hollywood in part for that. Authors like Graves. I'm a huge fan of Robert Graves' I, Claudius, and Claudius the God, which became the British TV series in the 70s. I, Claudius. They did stray from the truth. And Robert Graves was a great Roman scholar, so he knew he was doing it, but he was doing, changing history to make Caligula an absolute monster. By the end of his reign, Robert Graves, for example, talks of Caligula when he's age 14, and says he's doing absolutely despicable things. Roman authors such as Suetonius, at that age, Caligula was an absolute fear and of being bumped off, as his two elder brothers were, as his mother was, as his father seems to have been. Tells us that he was keeping his mouth shut and behaving himself impeccably, because he knew that both Sejanus, the head of the Praetorian Guard, and Tiberius, the emperor and his grandfather household. And if he said one thing or took one foot out of place, he could end up being executed or forced to commit suicide. So his evil traits, his wicked traits, didn't come out until well into his reign. Antoninus and other authors, Tacitus and other, tell us that the first 7 months of his reign were idyllic, and he was hugely popular with all classes, and he gave a general amnesty to all people in prison or who had been exiled. He did all sorts of wonderful things, but then he came down with a very serious illness, and was thought he wouldn't survive. And after that, his personality changed dramatically. And in the penultimate chapter of my biography, I discuss all the many potential medical reasons for that his change in mental state that have been put up by medical people over the years, and given to us by Suetonius and other authors tend to suggest that he may have had bipolar disorder, which tends to show itself by the time that people are 24 or 25. This would explain some of his... He went from being very cowardly to being incredibly impetuous and brave. These are extremes of bipolar. He only got 3 hours sleep a night toward the end of his reign. There are so many other symptoms that match up with the known symptoms of bipolar disorder. And he'd had epilepsy as a child, and that can be a red flag for bipolar. And so there could be a medical explanation for some of his as we see them, crazy acts, and cruel and capricious. And he also became very, very paranoid. He had every reason to be paranoid, growing up with all his family members being eliminated around him. That is another symptom of bipolar disorder, of suspecting anybody and everybody. And by the end, all those around him were so terrified of falling foul of him, they ganged up to assassinate him.
Now, you mentioned his family, and the Julian Claudian dynasty is pretty famous for being extreme and insane. But you see similar trends, and again, this is also interesting because a lot of them aren't related to each other at all. I mean, they are a bit, but not directly. But you think, okay, Nero also was considered quite a good emperor in the beginning before he was considered not. Tiberius, he wasn't so bad at the very beginning. And by the end, they were so excited about Caligula being emperor simply because he wasn't Tiberius. Claudius is, you think of Robert Graves's descriptions of this, kind of sweet fumbling academic. But, he was assassinating everybody as well. So the question is this really, was Caligula particularly worse than the others? Or did the position of emperor just make men mad?
There's the old saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And, of course, there were no constitutional boundaries as you find in modern democracies. So eventually, power can go to the head, particularly of young people like Caligula. As I say, he was 24 when he became emperor, and he was 28 at the time he was assassinated. As you say, Claudius was actually quite very clever, but when he's got a crazy wife like Messalina, who is going on behind his back without any concern of being caught is enough to make you suspicious of everybody around you. And also the madness and the cruelty, whilst we've been, history books have told us that this was, as you say, a key aspect of the Caesar family. Tacitus tells us that he rated Domitian, who's the emperor toward the end of the first century, and one of the Flavian emperors, to be just as crazy, if not more crazy, than the others. And if you study the emperors for over hundreds of years, there were some who were quite out of control. It's just that the likes of Graves and Hollywood and TV have focused, I mentioned Domitian, and the vast majority of your listeners would probably have never heard of him, but he had a huge impact on Roman society. So it's those who get the press get the fame.
Yeah, I do sometimes fear that we've sort of romanticized some of the characters, or we almost want to make them more evil. And, I mean, it comes back down to, again, how just some of these representations are, or if they really did all go completely mad. Because, there's certain accusations, like calling somebody a poisoner or accusing them of committing incest. Sometimes these accusations were thrown out in order to defame somebody's character because they were so hard to prove. I mean, do you think there are times where people have sort of been unjustly treated by historians after the fact?
Caligula is a prime example. Tacitus said, and Tacitus is our prime source for all the emperors of the first century. And the later emperors didn't have that kind of very talented and very thorough biographer, and this is why we know so much about those emperors of the first century, through Tacitus. But he said that many authors set out to cut down and defame the key emperors of the first century, including Caligula, Claudius and Nero, and tended not to write the good things that they did. Tacitus was a key source, and he wrote and of course we're very lucky that source has come down to us, because he quoted many other biographers that existed at that time, but whose works have disappeared. So and even then, the key years of Caligula's reign have disappeared from Tacitus, the copies of Tacitus' work that come down to us. So we have to rely on Suetonius, who was a bit of a pulp fiction writer, and Cassius Dio, who was writing 150, 200 years after the events. So we're very much reliant on the reports that have survived, and many of them were quite biased.
Well, and I feel like that Caligula might be even more difficult emperor to write about because of the de facto damnatio memoriae, the damnation of memory, that after he was assassinated, I mean, people tried to systematically remove anything that he did. And I always think a good example of that is the ships that he created in Lake Nemi, that these amazing feats of naval engineering that, with the wooden anchor and ball bearings, like inventions that we thought weren't created until Da Vinci. These were just sunk to the bottom of a lake simply because they wanted to remove anything that had to do with Caligula. So, I mean, this was something positive. I mean, maybe the way he probably incentivized engineers to come up with these things was less than kind, but the end result was absolutely amazing feats, and yet we would have known about these.
Like ball bearings.
Yeah.
It was assumed ball bearings weren't invented until only several hundred years ago, but he was the example of Roman engineers inventing ball bearings 2,000 years ago. And the ability, that science, disappeared for thousands of years. Caligula wanted to be considered an innovator. And I describe him as, when he came into power, being the grandson taking over the family business from Tiberius, his grandfather. And, yeah, full of innovative ideas. And there's no doubt that he encouraged engineers and scientists. He started work on the then Rome's two biggest aqueducts and massive constructions, which Claudius would later take credit for. And it was, you say that later generations removed all reference to Caligula. It started with Claudius. Claudius was lucky to survive Caligula's reign. And he played, he said himself, he played the idiot deliberately to escape Caligula's wrath. But everything to do with Caligula was immediately destroyed. All the coins back by Claudius's order. So all the coins that were had Caligula's face on them were recalled and melted down. The vast majority of his edicts were repealed. Anything that he had constructed, which had his name on or should have had his name on, was removed. And so on. So his reputation was destroyed almost from the day he was assassinated. But I can imagine him in a frenzy of construction, surrounded by engineers, and telling them, "I want these massive ships to float in Lake Nemi, and I want the statues of the goddesses." To be able to turn to follow the rising and setting moon, and this is why the ball bearings were invented. So I'm not suggesting he actually invented ball bearings, but he gave the engineering brains of the day the incentive to be as innovative as they possibly could.
And he was also sort of famous for doing some public reform as well. I mean, He published how public funds were spent and helped after fires and abolished some taxes. I mean, there was a couple, didn't even restore democratic elections at the beginning of his reign. I mean, there was a couple of really positive, like, public initiatives even, not just the engineering that he managed to put forth.
Absolutely, absolutely. Those first 7 months, it was, you know, almost nonstop. His initiatives. And of course his father Germanicus had been very, very popular with the Romans and had been cut down in his prime. He was the heir apparent, Tiberius's heir, and so the Roman people had great hopes for his children, that they would be as charismatic and as brave a soldier, and which Caligula never was. He never served in the army, unlike his father, who was a brilliant general, and that reputation even hung on until Nero's time. Nero was Caligula's nephew. And when he came to the throne, again, the Roman people said, the grandson of Germanicus has come to the throne. Thank heavens we're saved again. And again, he let them down.
You think they would have learned their lesson?
It's amazing. It's amazing. And for hundreds of years afterwards, Germanicus's birthday was celebrated by the Roman people. But you're right. You would have thought after Caligula, I would have thought that the family did not inherit the good traits of Germanicus.
And so considering that so much of this evidence was destroyed and lost, what kind of research were you able to do for your latest book?
I had been researching Caligula's family for about 40 years by the time I sat down to write this book. Because I mentioned Germanicus, I write about him extensively in my earlier books, in the stories of the legions and his military campaigns, and also in a book where I discuss his apparent murder, called Blood of the Caesars. And I've written about Nero and in a book called The Great Fire of Rome. So I've skirted around Caligula and written, he was more of a supporting character, if you like, in these other books. So I felt that it was pointed out to me that Caligula was being likened to Donald Trump, And and I was being asked by journalists, you know, is this, does it stand up? And so that started me thinking about looking at Caligula as a standalone book. And as I know, the Hollywood film, the 1979 Caligula movie, which was gory and sex-crazed, it was produced by Bob Guccione, the publisher of Penthouse. And he actually did a special edition of Penthouse in 1980 based on the movie. So he and his fellow scriptwriter, Gore Vidal, set out to make Caligula as sex-crazed and as horrific as they possibly could. So, and as I mentioned, Robert Graves, you know, departed from the truth a little when telling us about Caligula. So I felt that, that there was an opportunity to set the record straight, if you will, and talk about both the good and the bad qualities of Caligula.
To finish up, Stephen, what are you working on now?
Okay, so my next book is the first ever modern biography of Cyrus the Great.
We
spoke about Herodotus earlier, and he's one of the key sources on Cyrus the Great. So Cyrus the Great is talked about quite a lot these days, being compared again to President Trump. Cyrus the Great was the first king of the Persian Empire. He created the Persian Empire. And he's famous in the Bible as the only non-Jewish figure to be described as anointed by God, because he freed the Jewish exiles who'd been taken from Jerusalem and taken to Babylon by King Nebuchadnezzar. And Cyrus freed them and allowed them to go back, the Jews to go back to Jerusalem. So he has become famous in biblical history for that reason. But he's also a very, very interesting figure and a military figure. He came to power by rising in rebellion against his own grandfather, king of Media, and defeated one empire after another, the Median Empire, then the Lydian Empire, and then the Babylonian Empire, to become ruler of the biggest empire known to history to that point. And he was a really interesting character. So inspired by these comparisons again between modern figures and historical figures, I'm just now finishing it up and having the maps designed and collecting illustrations and so on for the book, which will be out in the northern spring of next year.
Oh, very interesting. Well, I very much look forward to reading it. It sounds absolutely fascinating. So I just want to say thank you so much for speaking up with us today. I'll put links below for all of our listeners for your latest book, Caligula, the Mad Emperor of Rome. And I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you, Anya. Likewise, I've enjoyed it as well.